afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill.
What are we doing today, Aaron?
I think today's going to be really fun.
I think it is, too. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've been speed reading, actually. We were speed reading the wrong book, though. It was one of his books, but we were speed reading the wrong book for today, so we had to speed read the second book. Our guest is A.J. Rice. He's an American publicist and the undisputed GOAT, greatest of all time, of conservative public relations. He's a columnist, a humorist, and an impresario. Officially, Rice serves as president and CEO of Publius PR, editor-in-chief of the Publius National Post on Substack. He's got a lot of really good stuff on there, too, by the way. And author of the number one Amazon bestseller, The Woking Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. And that's the one that I was way into. It really a good book. It's all the stuff we kind of know, but somebody finally put it in a book. He's a brand manager, a star whisperer, media influencer, and literary agent who has produced, promoted, or represented Laura Ingraham, Judge Jeanine Pirro, Donald Trump Jr., Monica Crowley, Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Senator Marsha Blackburn, Vivek Ramaswamy, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. He's got like all the people from the new administration, which will be fun, and a whole bunch of other people that I will probably tell you about later. But I'd like to get to him because we're pushed for time. We only have him as a hostage for an hour. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's going to fly by.
Uh-huh. So, AJ, where would you like to start? Because your album, let's see, it's the White Privilege album, which just has a great title, by the way.
Yeah, I just can't help myself. Great to be here, guys. I appreciate that. The Woking Dead is Volume 1. Came out in 2022. And it really deals with the end of the Trump first term and into the Biden second term. And pretty devastating stuff in that first year of the Biden administration, which, you know, we kind of have seen now unfold that we're now going to have to fix. But the White Privilege album is a sequel to that. And, you know, I write these things as almost like snapshots in time where I am. Some of the stuff is evergreen. Some of the stuff's timeless. But where I'm sort of cataloging, especially as it relates to wokeism and globalism, cataloging, you know, what we are going through. So it's a collection of vignettes. The first one was massive. It was like 98 vignettes. The new one, which came out in September, the White Privilege album, is about 82. But when you're talking about wokeism, you're talking about something that, you know, sometimes for some people is hard to nail with a wall, kind of like Jell-O. There's lots of flavors, right? It's like the 31 flavors. But with the White Privilege album, while I was promoting The Woking Dead in 2022, it dawned on me that some of these flavors are more toxic than others. So the racial element of wokeism, the racial element of DEI, ESG, of political correctness, of cancel culture. I try to drill down in the White Privilege album a little more on just that lane. And I try to sort of package it and do it in a fun way, in a humorous way. Although some of this stuff is serious stuff, the way I sort of write and handle it is to, you know, dunk on the leftists and try to make people laugh while they're sort of watching a train derail.
Yeah, and you really can't miss that. I really liked in part of the description of the book, it says the least talented people in American society have been working overtime for decades, dividing citizens along differences they think they can exploit. And, I mean, the laziest tactic proven to be the most effective is unleashing a battalion of racial grievance hustlers in the media, academia, entertainment, and politics. And if we stop fighting about our differences and start unifying on what we have in common, they will lose the power to divide us permanently. And honestly, that's like the last, that was like the Obama term into the Bidens, and now we're finally kind of seeing that. The part where everybody looks around and goes, "Hey, wait a minute! These guys are working us."
Well, yeah, I think we started to see this when Obama took office. I mean, we heard it time and time again that he was a race baiter. I mean, he really divided the country racially when he was supposed to bring it all together, and he did exactly the opposite. And then Biden kind of picked up where that left off. I mean, we've all known this has been going on. I particularly like the story you told of the interview with Morgan Freeman. I mean, that that was pretty telling. Why don't you share that with us?
Sure, sure. Well, look, you got to remember, too, guys, the first embers of this predate even Obama. I mean, you know, every Republican since the Florida recount has been called a racist in one capacity or another,
that's
even
true.
The ones that are not even our favorites. You know, I mean, even McCain and Romney were called it to some degree. George W. Bush had to deal with stuff all day long. There was that James Byrd ad where, you know, Bush was going to drag black people behind a truck. I mean, I don't know whether you guys remember that.
God, I forgot that.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
So, I mean, look, you got to remember. So Obama comes along and, you know, I don't know whether you recall this, but we were supposed to, when he got elected, we were supposed to enter this post-racial America.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, we do remember.
The declaration made, PBS and NPR and New York Times and all the other sort of low IQ journalists, that we were going to move beyond race, right? And, you know, he won the Electoral College vote. He won the popular vote, really against two stiffs. Two stiffs that were afraid to land punches on him because they themselves were afraid to be called names.
Yep.
As you can probably tell from my book, and you can hear it, I'm from Philadelphia. I'm not afraid of any of this. I grew up on the Philadelphia playgrounds with the Philadelphia sports teams. I have no problem dunking on black, white, purple people anytime, any place. It doesn't matter to me because I grew up in the, quote, neighborhood. The neighborhood Obama was talking about in Pittsburgh when he was pushing Kamala. We can get into that later. So Obama comes along, and it didn't take long. You know, the Cambridge police acted stupidly. If I had a son, he would look like Trayvon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Antifa's, you know, Occupy Wall Street, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. He midwifed them all into existence. And, you know, if you're wondering about some of these college campuses and why they explode with anti-Semitic intifadas, you know, some of Obama's teachers, some of his sort of intellectual sort of mentors, not just Frank Marshall Davis, but people like Rashid Khalidi, who, lo and behold, I hadn't seen his name in forever, this weekend, New York Post puts an image up where Joe Biden is up in the whitest neighborhood in America, Nantucket, I believe, or Martha's Vineyard, one of them.
<That's>
right. And he's carrying around Rashid Khalidi's book, which is basically, get the Jews, the hell with the Jews, get the Jews out of here. The Holocaust didn't happen, and even if it did, we're going to do another one. I mean, this is one of Obama's guys.
Wow.
I was really kind of surprised that he was carrying that around.
That was like carrying around Mein Kampf. Oh, a little light reading, guys. A little light reading there on the vineyard.
Yeah.
There's nothing like hunting Jews for Thanksgiving, right? For the Democrats.
Very casual. Very casual. Very subtle.
Right. So, but this is the soup Obama came out of, and he's a Gen X guy. And, you know, I hate to say this, I know some of the younger people, and I'm a millennial, they don't like to hear this, but, you know, the boomers, for whatever reason, you know, you might not like them for this reason or that reason, or they're, you know, they're not cool enough for you, but the reality is the boomers still have a direct line, because it was their parents, to a group of people that liberated Europe, that liberated the concentration camps, that saw them, that saw the aftermath. So it's not, you know, two, three, four generations removed.
True.
It's not a theoretical extrapolation. Somewhere in the 80s and into the 90s, when Obama was going to school and a lot of the Gen Xers were going to school, college in particular, this all became theoretical. Well, maybe the Holocaust happened. It might have been a stage play that the Israel put on. I mean, I don't know, right? Well, I don't know whether we should believe it. And even if it did, they're doing it to all the other terrorists that they live, that they're surrounded by now. So this is where we've gone in academia. This is due to a lot of things, not just political correctness and the sort of rise of the racial grievances in the humanities departments, the black studies and the purple studies and the yellow studies and the red studies and the, you know, underwater lesbian basket weaving studies and everything else, right? So it all became theoretical, and they're now the professors, people Obama's age.
Yeah.
So if you wonder why Columbia is exploding and UCLA is exploding and some of these other things, because of October 7th, that's why. That's why. So Obama was not some great uniter. Not some great uniter. If anything, he used his platform to fundraise for his library.
Yep.
Didn't do squat for black people. You know, and I think some African Americans, they don't have amnesia. I think they remember that.
Is he still promoting himself as the great? Is that still a thing, or did we all see through that?
Well, just remember, he was the second black president, because the first black president was a chubby white guy from Arkansas. So, you know. But my I guess my point is, he'll play the race card when he wants to.
Yeah,
for sure. But he midwifed a lot of the chaos that came, you know, on his way out. You know, I mean, the place was burning. Ferguson and Baltimore, these places were burning in his second term. ISIS was putting people in cages on beaches and lighting them on fire, cutting heads off, video choreographed decapitations.
Yep.
The border was kids in cages, the border's wide open. This is all Obama. You know, he's got stuff to do, guys. He's got to hang out with Jay-Z and Beyonce in the Situation Room. You have to understand that. Right? He's got to play basketball with LeBron and Jeff Flake. Right? That's what he has to do.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have time for this ISIS stuff and this Black Lives Matter garbage. Black Lives Matter is in a parking garage in Dallas, opening fire down on a parade, shooting cops. So I think they killed like five. Shrug your shoulders. They had it coming. So if you wonder why you got Trump the first time, I mean, it's like a white blood cells flying towards an infection. And wokeism, which is powered by, you know, the media, academia, Hollywood, is just the latest iteration of a very, very nefarious offshoot of regular Marxism called cultural Marxism. It came from a guy named Antonio Gramsci, who basically said you can't get the West by overthrowing them the traditional way. You're not going to get a Marxist revolution. As long as the middle class exists, see, now you guys, now you know why they have to destroy the middle class.
Yeah.
As long as the middle class exists, you're never going to hang the capitalists with the rope you manufactured. Not going to happen. You're not going to get a bunch of lumberjacks and oyster fishermen and corn and coal and cattle people to storm the White House and burn it down. Not going to happen. You're not going to get it. So you got to capture them another way, and that's through culture capture, right? Gramsci basically said that the hegemony of the culture is how you get them, but you got to be patient. You have to do the long march.
Oh, they're long great march. At
so
that,
you begin,
too.
You begin with Broadway. You begin with the silent picture industry. You begin with early radio and the newspaper business, and then you do the long march, and here we are. Here we are. And there's been some things that they weren't counting on. There has been. And they haven't been able to do it. It's not like flipping a light switch. You've got to do this over time. You know, through the Cold War, through the War on Terror nonsense, all the way up till today.
I just cannot believe that people have actually fallen for all of this for as long as they did. You know, it always seemed like something where, I don't know, everybody would just be smarter than that. But that really has absolutely not been the case. I don't know. I'm constantly shocked. Let's take a really quick break and then come back. Our guest is A.J. Rice. The book we're discussing is The White Privilege Album, Bringing Racial Harmony to Very Fine People on Both Sides. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? Mama always told me that I should play nice, but she didn't know you. She gave me that advice.
There was a time
the DEI
it felt like we were done.
It totally felt like we were done.
DEI and all this wokeism stuff was on a rolling train that didn't look like we were going to be able to stop it. And I think, AJ, I don't know, maybe you can back me up on this, but I think if nothing else, we've at least stopped the train. Do you think we're going to turn this thing around?
Sure. Here's the thing, though. Like I was discussing in the last segment, you know, cultural Marxism is patient.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're like termites. You can't see them, but they're there. You can certainly treat them. You can try to fumigate the house. That's what Trump's about to do with, you know, Cash Patel and a lot of other people. But, you know, this is generations of people being captured. So this isn't just one.
Right.
A lot of it comes, you know, from the levers of culture. So, you know, and look, they've even tried to creep into churches. I mean, we've got woke Jesus and the transgender Jesus stuff going on in England and stuff, like crazy stuff.
Yeah,
you wouldn't even believe stuff that I'm working on now for volume three. But I you know, but here's what I would say. The American people have a unique ability to deliver characters. Not perfect characters, not perfect people. There was only one perfect person, if you believe in those things. You know, and certainly not, and for those conservatives or those Republicans that, you know, I like Trump's policies, but I don't like him, and you know, that's, you know, you guys have heard it all, right?
Sure.
They're trying to apply a purity test, you know, and if you look at history, purity tests don't really work out. Part of the Democrats' problem is that they now apply a purity test to their own people. This is a party that, during the Obama years, drove Joe Lieberman from their party. And in recent history here, have driven people like Elon Musk, Tulsi Gabbard, who's our client, RFK Jr., who's our client, who's the heir. I mean, if this was Game of Thrones, he'd be the king of the Kennedys. He's the oldest male heir. Okay? Because John Jr.'s dead. He died in a car crash, or a plane crash.
Plane crash.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, people like Naomi Wolf, driven from, you know. Guys, Joe Rogan endorsed Bernie Sanders in 2016. So what have you been doing, Democrats, what have you been doing to lose these people? Why are the map of California in particular, you know, up where you guys are is one thing, but you know, why is the blue map of California shrinking? Why are people going into the voting booth in AOC's district and voting for Trump? What did you do? What are you doing? What have you been, since the OG came down the golden escalator, what have you been doing? You have been in a freak out, a full state of panic. Domestically, you have the wokeism. I talk about the four tyrannies. Wokeism's the cultural one. Then you've got the sort of judicial one. And, you know, that's the FBI run amok, the CIA run amok, DOJ, the state courts, the Soros prosecutors, doing whatever the hell they want, not being checked. Right? And then you've got Bidenomics. Not exactly saving the country's economy.
What?
Biden inflation, $6 eggs, gas prices. The Green New Deal is more important than the coal miners' union, more important than the Teamsters, more important than the UAW. Right? So, you know, and then obviously globalism is your sort of foreign policy tyranny. And that involves all kinds of things, you know. Countries in NATO not paying their fair share, letting China eat our lunch, you know. And you know, some of that involves the sort of medical tyranny of what was COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID to me looks like, oh my gosh, we're losing a trade war from China. Last time China got hit with tariffs, they put a bunch of people on airplanes. You know.
Yeah.
They were infected by something that escaped Dr. Fauci's underwear drawer. So, you know, but look, guys, here's what you have to understand. They are losing Democrats. They are losing independents. Like, if Trump was like a general manager of a baseball team, think about this, or the owner, right? A good one, not like a Jerry Jones, right? But like, if he was like George Steinbrenner, right, when he was alive with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Can you imagine making a trade for your poor Oakland Athletics or the Tampa Bay Rays or some, you know, small market team? The poor Padres or the poor, you know, Milwaukee Brewers or whatever. And you say to him, all right, I'm going to give you Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger.
Ooh, hard pass.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to give you Bill Kristol on all fours.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you Jonah Goldberg and the rest of these Never Trumpers and, you know, and a bag of beans. And then you're going to give me Elon, RFK Jr., Naomi Wolf, Tulsi Gabbard. Can you imagine? Talk about fleecing the Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
it's true.
And they ran around here, guys. I never thought of, and look, I was Laura Ingraham's executive producer on radio from 2005 to 2010. We might have even been on this station once upon a time. I don't know.
Probably were.
We might have been. Yeah. So if there's anyone out there in the audience, Laura sitting there talking to Lee and AJ, Matt and AJ, I was one of her sidekicks, right? And I was her executive producer. And now, ironically, the boss has me on her TV show and interviews me. It's always fun to be interviewed by your old boss.
It's funny. I just saw that the other day, and I wondered if that was weird.
No. Her and Monica Crowley are like my big sisters, because I was the producer for both of them back when I was a puppy, a wee lad. But, you know, I mean, she stood on stage in a national debate, internationally televised debate, and said, I stand here proudly with the endorsements of the Cheney family. And I've got this letter, and it's filled with Romney people, McCain people, you know, some backbenchers from the Bush administrations, and, you know, a couple janitors from the Reagan White House. And they were okay with that. They were proud with that. And what she did there was pretty much prove every conspiracy theory. You know, and I don't know everyone that's on your station, but, you know, there's probably some people that are still considered controversial. Everything that, like, Steve Bannon says and Tucker says and Jones, no, Jones could never be right. You know, the reality is that, like, some of these people are wrong sometimes. But I don't think it's a stretch to say, and I'm here, guys. I've been in Washington, D.C. for 20 years, and I can tell you, you know, her getting up there was like validation that, you know, there really is a uniparty. There really is a swamp. There really is an establishment, you know? So, and that they're all in league with each other. And that they're trying to protect their turf. And, you know, Trump's rolling with Tulsi, and she's rolling with Liz Cheney. I mean, who do you want to roll with?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't even think they were impressed by that. I mean, they realize they got a bottom of the barrel
sure.
pick.
Well, I will say,
I think
yeah,
it was a
right.
Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Raggedy Ann there.
Oh on yeah.
NBC. You know, the former press secretary.
Circle
Raggedy
back.
Ann.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she's. You know, I mean, look, a broken clock, right? But she made an astute point that, you know, liberals and. You know, whether it's the New York Times or MSNBC or their foot soldiers in between, they were really proud to have, you know, Liz Cheney and, you know, some of the Never Trumpers throw in with them and campaign with them. But they didn't bother talking to their own base.
Right, right.
Right?
They were impressed by it, but their guys were not.
I mean, shouldn't you be talking to, you know, the Plumbers Union of Philadelphia before talking to Liz Cheney? who lost her reelection bid by like 47%.
Yeah.
And obviously they don't have a constituency, dummies. In fact, their only constituency are you goofballs on MSNBC.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, and then they're being relegated to the dustbin of history.
What's her name? Jen Psaki. That's Raggedy Ann.
Yeah. Circle back, Jen. All these guys, they have overplayed it. But you know, that's a kind of a hallmark of the left. They get a little bit of steam, and then if you just sort of let them go, I see it on the environmental side a lot.
Sure.
They always go too far and blow themselves up.
Well, you know, a lot of, you know, our different conservative friends, some known, some not known, some greats and some near greats. They were, you know, during the Obama years, I was sitting next to Ingram and Crowley, and, you know, Andrew Breitbart was alive. He was kind of a mentor to me during those years. And, you know, I kept telling people, look, this Obama situation here, this is a unique phenomenon. There's not some apple orchard out there with a bunch of Obamas growing in it.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to fake this. All right, he showed up at the exact right time. George W. Bush, the 2008 financial collapse, Hank Paulson, the bailouts, the TARP 1 and the TARP 2 and the TARP 45 and then the, you know. Then he showed up at this unique moment where he was able to knock the Clintons out in a primary. And then he was up against Beavis there, John McCain, God bless him.
Yeah.
You know, the heroes that were captured, the heroes that weren't captured. You know, and he didn't really stand a chance. He wouldn't take it to him. He wouldn't bring up any Obama's radical associations. You know.
No, they ran an absolutely gloves off campaign, which was
right. The
100% wrong move there.
Right, but what I told them was, look, this is all they got. And if you guys really study it, there's been shenanigans involved in every single Democrat nominating process since Obama left. Let me give you just a brief history of time. In the convention in 16, we know this because Donna Brazile told us in her book, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton rigged that convention against Bernie Sanders, Joe Rogan's guy.
That's right.
Okay? With the superdelegates to keep them off the floor, to keep a floor fight from happening. Bernie had a crap load of delegates, guys. It wasn't like in 2020. He had a ton. He was beating her. All over the place. And they had to do a little three-card Monty there to make sure she was safe. If you fast forward to 2020, you got all these, you know, the Barnum and Bailey circuses out there. And at some point, Jim Clyburn, right after Iowa and New Hampshire, they decided when the South Carolina primary happened that they were going to tell everyone to get out of the race. And they all started jumping. Crazy Eyes Corey and Pocahontas and Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, they all jump out of the race so that it cleared a pathway for Biden to start to win primaries. And then they just took him to Delaware, and they've got the extension cord out. They plugged him into the wall. And, you know, he supposedly got 81 million votes from the base.
Yeah.
Right? So fast forward to this time. Here we go again. Biden decides to debate Trump early. Can you imagine in the MCU multiverse, guys? Right? If you were talking about the Deadpool movie and the Spider-Man movie, in a parallel dimension, the Democrats actually allow RFK Jr. to debate Biden in a primary way earlier than even the Trump debate. And it's no, I have, look, I know Bobby. He would have knocked him out way earlier. Way earlier. So Biden might not even have won his own primary, you know, against RFK Jr. We don't know. But they hid him. They hid him from that. They protected him there. They couldn't protect him from Trump. And, you know, Trump went in there and shattered his glass jaw. Next thing you know, the greatest political mastermind known to in America today, George Clooney, writes an op-ed in the New York Times, and they yank him. They do a soft coup, they play musical chairs, and then the second most unlikable woman in history, maybe the first now, becomes the nominee.
Yeah.
You know, they go shopping for a white guy. They go to Total Wine, and they go to the Chardonnay aisle, and they find a, you know, a fruity, crisp white with stainless steel, no oak aging or anything. But and you know, they put Tim Walton
with the rubbery, doughy hands.
It was the, cracking myself up now.
It was the waving.
That was just so bizarre that they picked him.
Yeah, it's like, wait a second, is this real? You guys are just fooling with us, right?
So there you go. But that, you know, I'm like laughing. So I'm trying to be serious. I'm like, I can't get through my own jokes. Look, they had three nominating processes here that all look like, you know, a rigged hot potato of nonsense.
Yeah.
So like I told my friends many, many years ago, that once this Obama's gone, you know, they're going to have to, you know, do-si-do the voters to get them to believe that they're authentic.
Yeah.
Didn't work this time.
No. Well, it's...
That's what the American people are always looking at, too, guys. And it's even when the Democrats win. You know, enough independents believe that whoever it is, whether it's the peanut farmer or Bill Clinton or whoever it is, that there's a level of authenticity and meritocracy involved. And people can smell a phony. You know, there's this term in gangster rap. It's called a studio gangster. All right? Most of the African Americans, Latin Americans, when they're looking at her, even Indian Americans, she supposedly can make a great curry. Even the Indian Americans voted for Trump against her. And, you know, probably because she looks like some sort of composite created in some DEI lab, you know, and they put her out there to try to make her authentic. She's been failing upward her whole life. You guys had to deal with her there longer than
God.
America has.
God, yes. Well, the thing is, I remember I attended a thing 10 years ago, longer, I don't know, with the sheriff, our county sheriff, and it was some big statewide law enforcement thing. And she was the attorney general, and she's up there talking, and I really didn't know anything about her. I'm not from California. I just live here now. And I just like to make that distinction. Bill is from here, just so we could be clear. Anyway, she was talking, and I looked over at him, and I said, "Do you guys like this lady?" He looked at me, and he goes, "Nobody likes her." they all think she's an idiot. I go, "Why is everyone sitting here?" And they're like, "Because we have to." And I thought, oh, okay. So I figured her, you know, career was capped out at that point. Imagine
her
surprise.
She had the Barbara Boxer Senate seat. You don't have to just remind me and remind the audience. She did not exactly run away with that primary, right? The Democrat primary. Right.
No. And Barbara Boxer was terrible, only to be, you know, we've...
But what I mean is...
We have a bad history there.
Yeah, but she wasn't some consensus runaway pick to replace her.
Oh,
right?
No. No.
Right.
No, and that's been kind of the theme of the whole thing. It was fascinating. Even when they asked people, you know, if you kind of watched all the wide ranging man on the street interviews, you know, the funny ones, the serious ones, you know, why do you like her? And even the people who said they liked her didn't know why. I mean, they had nothing. There was nothing that stood out. There was no policy. It's like, oh dear, this is bad. I don't know. My contention is they put Waltz with her because they knew she was going to implode, and they needed somebody who had no political future. So they found him. They didn't want to burn one of their good guys.
They threw him on a landmine.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. They're like, hey, do you want to run for VP? He's like, sure.
AJ, you mentioned that debate with Trump. Whose decision do you think that was to even have that debate? He was in no condition to debate anybody. I mean, he didn't have the most brilliant campaign managers, but do you think that came from
that
his campaign, or do you think the decision to do that was pressured from above?
He was asked about it. Problem is, he was asked about it, and it was early. It was early. It was an early debate. You know, it wasn't like the old days where they do, you know, one in August, one in September, one in October. And, you know, he was asked about it by a journalist, and then they tweeted it that he, you know, they were eager to go. They really, they're totally delusional. They were like eager to get out there to debate Trump.
Wow.
And, You know,
I always thought that was probably fake, that we just believed
they
that. They really said that,
chipper.
Huh?
Yeah, now they walked into a wood chipper. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
they really
did. And that's why, they were able to replace her. My whole point was, if he had to debate Bobby earlier than that, he might have been gone sooner.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They could have, without a real process, the American public doesn't really get to see who they're dealing with. Although from a policy standpoint, it was fairly clear. I mean, I'm not really sure who was really missing the message on that. But let's take a really quick break. We'll come back with our guest AJ Rice. He is the author of a terrific book called The White Privilege Album. You'll like it. And The Woking Dead, you'll like that too, actually. That's the one I've actually read, and you'll love that one. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. If you don't like it here, get the heck out of town. Go and find somewhere you love. It's fine with me. We don't need people riding the fence. You're either riding with us or you're riding. Make up your mind which side you stand. If you ask me, this whole world has gone to hell. I speak the truth, but these days the truth won't sell. I bleed red, white, and blue in my ways you just can't change. Wrong or right, I give my life. This place called USA. That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. So, AJ, I don't know what the deal is. Maybe it's because you're in Philadelphia. I feel this overwhelming urge to play country songs today. I just realized I was on kind of a weird theme.
That's okay. AJ, how
I
much?
Like Carolina,
we're up here in rural Northern California, where we do what we want.
Wait a minute. Isn't Levin on your station?
Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah, there you go. So he's from the next neighborhood over.
Well, and we're like 2.5 hours north of Sacramento.
In Philadelphia. Yeah.
Yeah, right next to you. All right, sorry.
Yeah, I'm from the Northeast. He's from North Philly. He's actually from the same neighborhood that Bibi Netanyahu spent a lot of time in, grew up in for a certain, when he was in the United States.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Jewish neighborhood.
See, I grew up in West Hartford in a big-time Jewish neighborhood.
Jesse Waters is kind of from that same general area. And Michelle Malkin.
Whatever happened to her?
I think she went into self-imposed retirement.
Oh, that's funny. I haven't heard of her in a long time.
Somebody told me she might have had a health issue or something, but she was amazing. We loved her.
Yeah.
And I worked with her over the years. I haven't seen her in a while.
So how much influence do you think Pelosi had in ousting Biden? Because according to her, she had absolutely nothing to do with it, which I think is another colossal
lie. It was definitely Obama, Pelosi, and Schumer and money people. And they knew they needed some sort of, torpedo in the water. And I read a story the other day that Clooney's ticked off that he was tricked into, becoming a political mastermind there in the New York Times. Franz Ferdinand Shooter. But these are dummies,
Yeah.
They're dummies. They're all Obama's trying to do his best to try to still run things there. As a puppet master. That's why he keeps a house in D.C. Anytime an ex-president doesn't leave, you got a problem.
Yeah. Well,
true.
I think he's toast along with the rest of them after this.
Well, they all
look, guys, you have like 1,000 counties that voted for him twice and voted for Trump 3 times.
Yeah.
Or at least 2 times. So the Obama coalition is dead.
Yeah.
And look, the White Privilege album kind of predicts some of what has gone on here, and that is that eventually people of all shapes and sizes and colors, you know, all from the Benetton ads, all from the sushi menu of, you know, how the left tries to put us into little identity boxes, that they're eventually going to say, you know what, we all kind of want the same thing. Stop trying to put us into, you know, the different Crayola 64 box colors. Stop talking down to us. Yeah. And if you look at the subtitle of my book, Bringing Racial Harmony to Very Fine People on Both Sides, obviously I'm trolling the left, but, you know, the Very Fine People hoax, that was kind of the foundational lie from the Charlottesville situation where, you know, they took Trump out of context and it became this sort of, you know, proof that he was Hitler and he was a Klansman and he was, you know,
right,
you know, white supremacist. But who's really bringing racial harmony to Very Fine People? And I know listening right now out there, there's tons of very fine people in this audience. I just want to give a shout out to them. But, you know, there were two blue walls that went down, guys. Yeah, the one that everyone talked about up there with Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. The second blue wall ran from El Paso, Texas, down to Brownsville, Texas. And they were counties along the Texas-Mexico border that have been voting Democrat for decades. They're not exactly filled with Scandinavians, guys.
Right.
Okay? They all flipped to Trump. That's the second blue wall. How did Trump get the Muslims in Michigan and the Jews in Pennsylvania to both vote for him?
How about the Amish?
How did he do it?
He got the Amish to vote. I mean, forget who they voted for, but the Amish don't even vote, typically.
Listen to me. He won the Amish vote in Pennsylvania. He won the Indian vote, both types of Indians, not just, you know, Indians like Cash Patel and Vivek, but Native Americans, right? Not the Cleveland Indians. They're the Guardians now. But Native American votes. He's winning the Amish. He won the Gula. People don't even know it. What's the Gula?
Yeah, what is
well,
the Gula?
This African tribal people in the low country of the Carolinas and Georgia. They are black, very conservative people. Okay? So there's, we're talking about Mike. So, yeah, he won the big tribes, right? Jews and Muslims and Latin Americans and African Americans he peeled off as more than the most of anyone since Reagan. But there was just this gigantic, you know, multi-ethnic working class coalition that was put together of all shapes and sizes and incomes because they don't want globalism. They don't want wokeism. It was a rejection. This was a woke Waterloo moment. And thankfully, because of Elon and Peter Thiel and a few other people from Silicon Valley, a lot of the tech bros either stayed out of it, like Zuckerberg, or they threw in with Trump. Because Elon did the biggest digital jailbreak in history when he bought Twitter and restored everyone's accounts so that information could flow again. Zuckerberg, I guess, was the last dummy to find out that, you know, the Department of Justice lies to people. He did his big mea culpa to Joe Rogan. He sent that letter to Jim Jordan. Hey, they told me the Hunter Biden, you know, Anthony Blinken and the Cheneys told me that the Hunter Biden laptop was real. I mean, and, you know, Zuckerberg bought it. Plus, you got to remember, guys, these tech bros, you know, they are, you know, they're not exactly Kobe Bryant, right? They're not exactly Tom Brady. So they are very competitive with each other. They're kind of beta, you know, had their first girlfriend when they were 27.
Yeah.
But they are very competitive with each other, and Elon has been relentless in making wokeism, and specifically DEI, uncool. Uncool. And look, Vivek comes from that tech world. J.D. Vance comes from that tech world. So you see, and you know, Washington is scared. I can tell you right now, I've seen these pieces popping up in all these places that none of your audience should ever go to. Right? Axios, Politico, Axios, right?
Those are the, but that is where you go. Whenever it's all hitting the fan, go there. Don't go to your own media. You already know what you think.
Pieces. Yeah. Scared. What if the tech companies all, what if the, you know, because Zuckerberg went to Mar-a-Lago last week. What if the tech bros all throw in with Trump?
Right.
They'll be like the oligarchs around Putin. That's what they're starting to say, that they're the oligarchs now. Now they're the oligarchs around Putin.
The
Trump
really.
Is Putin, and the Trump is Putin, and the tech bros, you know, who left their parents' basement when they invented something when they were 35, that they're all the oligarchs. They're all the Russian oligarchs. They're the inheritors. It's just insane. They can't think of anything else.
They're so scared.
We have to have some major conspiracy of some sort. Russia already played itself out. Although I will say, by way of apology to the country, California felt the need to put Adam Schiff in the Senate. What in the ever-loving hell?
Oy.
Yeah. Things we can't explain.
Well, just be prepared for Schiff to get his hair cut by Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Josh Hawley. He's not just going to be able to sit up there in Tuberville. I mean, somebody,
no.
You know, he never had a chance. He never had to debate, you know, Senator Kennedy from Louisiana.
Oh, my God, I love that guy.
Ready.
He is my favorite.
He better be ready. You know, so, I mean, there's nothing we can do. I mean, Steve Garvey would have been great. But California, unfortunately, you know, as far as winning statewide elections, it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Although, flipping 10 counties in California.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
With the climate that
now,
we have had.
It could be possible in the future if the Democrats made a fatal mistake. They were worried that African Americans were going to leave their party, so they went about a 25-year plan to replace. We talk about replacement theory. Yeah, here's the real replacement theory. Here's the real replacement theory. The real replacement theory is the Democrats thinking they could replace black people with brown people. So what did they do? They imported millions of Catholic people that never have abortions and never get divorced, that all just escaped some Marxist dump. They all just escaped some Marxist dump and then expected them to, you know, think Maxine Waters was a genius. I don't think so.
Yeah, unlikely. Yeah, it's kind of funny, and the other thing too is when you know, not that I'm a fan of open border, but they did import a lot of people who have been just jacked up by their own government and controlled forever, and you bring them here, and it's like, all right, now we're going to control you. They're like, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, look, and just like a white soccer mom in suburban Washington, you know, you think the Arab Americans and devout Jewish people and Catholic Latin American people, Hispanics, you think they want Gary and Bill in their daughter's bathroom? I don't think so.
Yeah, highly unlikely.
And that's a huge mistake that they have made, and it looks like they're going to double down on that because we're now going to have a fight about bathrooms on Capitol Hill, I guess. And they're doubling down on some of the trans mafia wokeism, which is good for the Republican Party because
absolutely.
The Democrats are bleeding constituencies because of it, and it'll be good for me too because maybe I can write a third book about it.
It should be a wealth of terrific information, I would think. How'd you get into all this anyway?
Well, I mean, like I said, I've been in the game. You know, I helped a Republican congressman from outside of Philadelphia win. In 2004, came to D.C., got checked up with Ingram, first as an intern, then as an assistant, then as an associate producer, then as an executive producer, and now I'm her guest. No, I'm joking. She gave me a blurb for the first book. That's kind of how. I mean, I've kind of had to make my way, sort of invent my jobs as I go along. I mean, my background was in, you know, English literature. So, you know, and then some political science. I would say 9/11 kind of altered my college curriculum a little bit. And then I've just been sort of building along the way. But I will tell you, Trump showing up was a huge boon for Publius PR because that's my day job. We put people on shows like this. It's not usually me. I'm usually behind the curtain.
Well, I started reading a bunch of your stuff, and I'm like, I got to get that guy on here. He's our kind of guy. And then I started reading your list of people. I'm like, and his guys are our guys.
Yeah.
We need to be special friends.
Well, look, half the cabinet are our people.
I know.
It's really
It's a really sweet list.
Yeah, Yeah, we're running out of clients now, so I'm gonna have to
cherry picking them all.
I'm gonna have to go back and get Ingram some coffee for a living.
Oh my gosh, AJ, we have to escape. The news is gonna cut us off, and I gotta play Dude Looks Like a Lady just, you know, to cap this off.
Hit it.
AJ Rice has been our guest. You're listening to We the People.
AJ.
We'll be right back.